95.1 FM, Freeview 277, and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and a stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello.
Hello.
Did you breathe then?
I had to breathe halfway through that, didn't I?
Yeah. You need to run around the block. I was thinking as I came in.
Oh, Paul, no.
Yeah. I put my thinking cap on because it amused me.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like the Wild West out there with the
it
gale.
Was. It was a bit blowy, wasn't it?
Another one. Yeah. I don't know. I've lost track. They give them all such sweet names, yeah, don't they? Jocelyn, I think it is.
I think that's what's attracting them.
Well,
keep naming them. Stop naming them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I was Jocelyn with my umbrella.
Were you?
And I went in the back car park where, you know, trades go, where we go.
Yeah.
Tried not to scratch your car as I slithered in.
Yeah, I should think so.
And then when I went into the reception where lovely Leslie is, I didn't see her today, but she...
Chloe was in today.
Chloe was in.
Yeah.
So as I came in, I saw all the cameras behind her desk where she can see everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, she must see me, the state I am getting out the car, because, you know, I got a little sports car. So.
Oh, don't you know, we all stand there laughing at you.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah.
Because I've
got a little audience. I've been selling tickets. I go, watch this. Watch this old bag get out of our car. It's hilarious.
It's terrible. Because yeah. It's very low. Yeah. And so I'm getting out. And then I've got my little coffee thing going on in one hand.
And your boiled egg.
My boiled egg in a jar. Then I've got a handbag. And then I've got my car keys. And I'm trying not to let my car scratch your car as I get out.
She's got a Sainsbury shopping trolley. Yeah.
I have.
And it's got a sleeping bag in it.
And I've got an umbrella and I've got my homeopathy. And I mean, you'd have to be an octopus, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So I'm getting out and my leg's caught in the, you know, in the, what's it called that you put round you? What's that?
The seatbelt.
Yeah, seatbelt.
That's him.
All that. And I thought, she must sit there and just have such a laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
And then my hair was all over, but I didn't have any hands. So I'm walking along going, you know, that works on radio. And, yeah. Anyway, so I got in one piece and then I saw the camera and I just thought, wow, it's priceless, isn't
it? Yeah. Talking about CCTV, we had a funny one the other day at our place in Tenterton. Some bloke came walking down the roadway into our place there, saw the CCTV camera.
Did a tap dance?
No, he put a scarf around his face and pulled his hoodie over his head.
Oh, dear.
Then he came into the car park and tried the door handles on all the cars, which were all locked. He then walked back up the path. But as he walked up the path, he didn't realise there was a camera facing the other way, and he took his hoodie off and his scarf off, and we got a wonderful full-face picture of him.
And who was he?
I don't know what his name is.
We sent him
to the cops, didn't we?
Yeah, but police don't do anything.
No. They said, if he comes back, tell us.
there are ways to get the police round, but it's not that way.
Well, I'm just about to shoot someone.
I can't say on FM.
Yeah.
That's very shifty, though, isn't it?
Mm.
I think they've probably spotted that it's a new thing, you know, a new venture,
and it's all lush
and everything's gorgeous, and people are opportunists. We've had a lot of car thefts in Whitstable, actually, and bike thefts. I got my Claude Butler bike, which was my favourite bike, stolen. New husband took it to the station. This is going back 10 years when I could ride a bike.
Yeah.
And and he said, can I borrow your bike? Because his was flat or something. And I said, you're going to get it nicked. He said, no, I won't. I'll be really careful. So took it to Whitstable station, comes home looking like, you know, hangdog, and it had been stolen. And on the CCTV, the police said there's two guys and they wheeled out four bikes, all, you know, and Claude Butler's a lovely bike.
Yeah, I
loved that bike. And they said, yeah, we can see them, but,
yeah,
you know.
They've taken your bike.
Yeah, they've taken my bike. And new husband's bought me an electric bike now, but I fell off it because they're strong. They're really powerful. It pinned me because it was like, I got on and thought, I started pedalling and then I did a gear and I reared up like Bucking Bronco. It fell on me, Bucking Bronco, with a B.
Yeah.
And it fell on me and broke my ribs.
So good grief. Have you been back on it since?
No. Mm. Well, now we've got a greyhound. We've rescued Darcy Greyhound.
Electric greyhound.
I wouldn't take. I don't like dragging dogs along on bikes because they like sniffing and meandering.
And she has a tendency to fall on them, of course.
Yeah, they're so heavy, electric bikes. I cracked all my ribs. If anyone's listening has ever had cracked ribs,
I thought you were going to say, "Do you want to buy an electric bike?"
Yeah, it's rotting in the garage. Yeah. And it's a lovely bike. I will try again, but Darcy Greyhound can't be left, so I can't go off for a little bike ride unless the new husband's there, and he's always windsurfing, so very difficult. I'm having my nails done on Thursday, and there's a whole thing about are you at home? Because I've got to go out for an hour and have my nails done.
I've told you this before. This, you know, it cramps your style.
I know. My style is cramped, but she is lovely, and she's great company. We snuggled up yesterday when the new husband was out and watched Downton Abbey. Again, I've watched it, but I love it.
Yeah, but no, she's your only excuse for buying new shoes, though, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Because she eats all your other ones.
Yeah.
You can't leave her on her own.
No, she's eating our windows and our door.
Right.
But we're trying. We've bought a camera. And
she's taking selfies now.
We can watch her. So what we did was, it was very exciting. On Sunday, we left her for 15 minutes. So we take her for a walk, we settle her, I put on classic FM, give her a chew, give her a calming tablet, herbal, and we went out for 15 minutes. And we're running out of things to do in 15 minutes because you can't sit outside because she knows you're there. So we trundle around, we went to B&Q, walked around there for 15 minutes, and we watch her on the camera, and she moved from the sofa. I thought, oh, God. But she walked to her bed, lay down, settled. Then she got up again. I thought, oh, God. And then she looked out the window, and then she lay down again. So we had 20 minutes.
Sleep, aren't they? They're supposed to sleep most of the day.
Well, they should, but she's got anxiety about being left. You think of a greyhound. They've always been with 100 dogs. Yes, they've never been on their own in a suburban house. Not that my house is suburban.
Can you speak over the camera?
Yeah, you can, but I didn't know if that would freak her out or not. But it was funny because we left it on yesterday while new husband was in London. I forgot to turn it off. So he was watching me. Lucky I didn't have lovers around, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was watching me and it says, comes up on his phone, human spotted or human
set. Human motion, it
yeah,
says.
Yeah, motion. And he could see me.
Yeah,
nibbling about. But I'm on a new regime, Paul Andrews.
Oh, no.
I'm going to drive you mad.
No, you do drive me mad.
I'm going to drive you madder. So I've always eaten paleo, and I know Ed is chefy foodie. We're going to talk about food a lot, I know.
This is our guest who we're going to speak to in a moment, Ed Grimes.
Ed Grimes.
Who's...
Hospitality Talent UK.
Thank you.
And their website must be www.hospitalitytalent.uk.com. UK.com. So he's going to be talking to us, and we're going to have a... But I must say, I know you're in a rush, but I must say, new regime, working with my nutritionist, Christine Bickley, who's amazing. So cutting out all sugars, and you know sugar is in everything.
That's the problem, though, isn't it? Is they put
pate,
sugar in everything.
Sugar,
yeah.
Crisps, sugar.
Tea bags, sugar. Coffee, sugar.
Long story short, I'm having good fun. I'm eating loads. So I had last night, as you asked.
Well, you always eat loads.
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
Yeah, but I'm eating loads more, so I'm not thinking about eating a biscuit. I mean,
You can't eat processed food at all, can you?
But I never eat processed food anyway. But this is, you know, like carrot even, tomatoes, is sugar. So she wants me to, it's just 90 days out of my life.
Okay.
And I've done it after Christmas, went wild at Christmas. But it's no alcohol, and that's going to kill me. Not that I'm an alcoholic, but...
Yes, she is.
I had steak last night. It was beautiful. And I thought, God, with a nice Merlot...
You should have had a glass of Ribena with it, that's what you...
Well, no, that's sugar, isn't it?
Oh, true.
I had your ginger mother
Did
root.
You?
What's it called? What's it actually called, that drink?
Mother root.
Yeah, we need to go on Instagram, because they're on Instagram, and talk to them about it.
Why?
Because I like it, I'm pleased.
Well, I think
you're a bit curmudgeonly about it.
I finished it.
Yeah, but you moaned about it.
I moaned about everything.
Yeah, I'm very into it. What's it called?
I'm good at mother root. Mother root.
I thought it had another name beginning with S. Some sort of weird name.
No.
I'll have a look later. Anyway, I liked it. Would you like to read something, Paul
Andrews?
I've
been trying to, yeah.
Go on. I'll sip my coffee.
Make your business a winner. The Kent Businesses Awards are now open for all businesses in Kent, and it's free to enter. Over the past 8 years, the Kent Business Awards have become sought-after awards for local businesses in Maidstone, Medway, Tunbridge Wells, Ashford and Canterbury and their surrounding areas who've gained promotion and the recognition from their local community. So does your organisation have great customer service? Have you created an outstanding innovation, maybe? Perhaps you're a great employer or you're a successful entrepreneur. Whatever your business strengths, you need to shout out about them to make sure potential customers choose you over their competitors. All the winners are entered into the Best Of Award to find the overall best business in Kent 2024.
Ooh.
Yeah. The following are the awards for... Now, the awards take place for Maidstone, Medway, Tunbridge Wells, Ashford and Canterbury. They're separate awards. And then there's an overall winner. And each of those areas has awards in the following categories. Startup. Are you a new startup that's shown a clear path to success? A micro business. That's one with a business with under 10 employees. A small business, which is a business with more than 10, but less than 50, which is a medium business. Are you a creative, digital or innovation business? You can apply for the customer service award, the best family business, the best construction business, the best hospitality business, the best leisure and tourism, best food and best drink producer, businesswoman of the year. And there's a new award this year, sponsored by All Health Matters, and it's the All Health Matters Wellbeing Award, where you must be able to demonstrate a positive and proactive occupational health and wellbeing strategy in your plans, policies and communications. There's also the MHA Accountant Sustainable and ESG Business of the Year. So if you want to look at the details of that, with a view to putting your business forward in any of those areas for any of those categories, if you go to their website, which is businessawardskent.co.uk, you can find out all about it there.
Beautiful. So I'm just arguing with somebody about soy milk, because, you know, I was talking to my cleaner, who's not very healthy, and she's really nice, the latest cleaner, Paul Andrews.
This week's cleaner.
I mean, cleaners and hospitality. It's like, you know, in Whitstable, we've got lots of Airbnbs. It's right, really, yeah, really hard. And my lovely cleaner, Amy, of 4 years left, I cried. And I can't, why did she leave?
Yeah.
Full-time job at a vet's, practice manager, which is great for her. She gets a pension and, you know, but I loved her. She was like my daughter. She was just so sweet. And she'd just come in and sort my house, and it was great. And but I've had since 5 different cleaners, and I could show you pictures
Look at the dust in here.
Not in here. But I could show you how one, I hope they're not listening, how one left my bathroom was like, it was like the cat had done it. But anyway, this nice lady, she's really nice, and she's not very healthy through no fault of her own. She's been quite ill. And we were talking when she was supposed to be cleaning, but we were chatting because I was on my computer. And I said I drink a lot of organic coconut milk. I know Ed's really into food. I mean, you could just go out now. Ed and I could talk about coconut milk. I know what you're going to say. So I have an organic coconut milk.
You have a what?
Organic coconut
milk. Oh, organic,
milk,
right.
Which I put in my coffee.
Right.
Or sometimes I have it with fruit.
It's horrible. It's disgusting.
And I whiz it up. Mm. And she says, I really like soy milk. And she's quite overweight.
And soy milk's really sweet,
isn't it? Quite puffy. No, but it's not good.
It's not good for you.
Soy is really bad for the hormones. So I've got loads.
I thought it was good for estrogen. No, is it not good for that?
Well, exactly. But you don't always need estrogen. So
right, my wife is drinking it.
Oh, I would get her off it. I would get her off it. seriously, I can put you in touch with Christine Bickley, my nutritionist. So I've just found a raw dairy company in Canterbury at a farm. And, you know, we're homogenizing. I can't say it, homogenizing.
Yeah, homogenizing.
Our milk, which takes away all the nutrients.
Mm.
We are, you know, we're pasteurizing everything. So raw milk, if it's done properly, it's so good for the gut, yes, like the bone broth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would look at soy milk and I wouldn't take it. So I would rather have dairy than soy milk.
What's wrong with soy milk?
It plays with the hormones. So what you're saying, but if she had thyroid problems, for example.
Yeah, so it solves one problem and causes another, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the Japanese seem to do really well on it. I don't know enough about it, but I think their soy is different. It's not this soy milk that we buy in bulk.
The same stuff you,
and if you look at the rice milks and the oat milks and that, even the coconut milk that you buy in the supermarket, it's got about 5 ingredients in. So, hello.
Hello. I used to be the milk monitor at primary school.
I know, I saw this. So I was tweeting, Paul and I are so old that we remember getting free milk at school. You know, and the veganism, I've been attacked by a doctor today because I was saying about soy in there. He's jumping on me, So I said to him, well, tell me about it. You know, tell me if it's good for you. Why is it good for you? And then I've copied in Christine Bickley, the nutritionist.
Right,
so
anyway, we need to move on with his show.
Yeah.
Talking about your...
But what were you saying about you were milk monitor?
Well, just making the point.
Well, you were saying, in those days, there was cream on top of the milk.
The blue tits used to take the tops off the milk and drink the cream.
You can't blame them.
And then in the winter, of course, the milk would freeze in the bottle and pop out the top, so you had a milk ice lolly.
But do you remember you'd have it in a glass bottle? I mean, Ed's a bit young. But
I
glass,
remember that. I
really?
I remember those, yeah.
He looks so
milk,
young.
But I do remember those.
You'd have a glass bottle and a little straw.
Yes.
And it was, you really looked forward to it, didn't you?
Yeah, unless it was the summer when it was warm.
Yeah,
it was stopped when I was at primary school, probably.
I wonder if they'll ever bring it back.
No.
They won't, because everybody wants to be vegan now.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah, have a look at soy. I'll try and send you some info.
Yes, please. Yeah, that'd be good.
Right.
Anyway, this morning I was on my sugar-free 90-day thing. I was going to have some pate last night, and I read the ingredients, and it's got sugar in, like second ingredient.
There you go.
So I've given it to the dog.
Lovely.
She's leaping about on a sugar high at the moment. But so I'm looking for a recipe now, chefs, for just making my own liver pate without sugar.
Chicken liver is easy to make, isn't it?
Yeah, just mash it up.
It's lovely, yeah.
Well, my new husband's Jewish, so he grew up on chicken liver, chopped liver. Okay. But I guess you can stir in something like tomato puree or something just to make it a bit more less livery.
Sherry, I think I put in it.
Sherry? Yeah. Like that. Oh, yeah, that would be nice.
It's got booze of some sort.
Yeah.
I've made it once.
Or maybe orange, even. Yeah. Squeeze an orange.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we play some cheesy tunage?
This morning I fried my egg in coconut.
This is your problem.
This is one of my favourites. This is Hotel California.
It is. I wonder why I chose that for
hospitality.
It, oh, yeah.
And it's the Eagles.
Yes.
This is a really good song to sing along to.
Is it?
Yeah. Turn the mic off. Do you like it?
I saw the Eagles live at the Hop Farm.
Wow.
About 10 years ago.
The Hop Farm?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The drum's going to come in a minute.
Any minute now.
Yeah. Yeah. And were they good?
They were brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
I covered the Hop Farm once for the Whitstable Times. You saw my photo, didn't you, of that band? Was it Electric?
Last thing I remember, I was running for the door.
Bay, the Eagles, Hotel California. I was saying, trying to get a word in edgewise before that came on, I saw them live at the Hop Farm at Pembury about 10 years ago. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, the Hop Farm at Pembury.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking about, there's one in Faversham, isn't it? The Hop.
Yeah,
oh, the
yeah,
Hop
no.
Festival.
Yeah, no, the Hop Farm in...
How long ago did you see him?
Paddockwood.
How long ago?
It was about 10 years ago. It was a massive concert. Massive concert. There were all kinds of people on. The Killers, 10cc. Yeah.
Wow, I would love that. Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
You've got an announcement to make.
Oh yeah, I was just going to wish.
Hang on, I'll just get my trumpet out.
No, you don't need that.
Oh, okay.
No, I was just going to wish my son a happy birthday.
Which one?
It's Jamie, my eldest.
Is
it's his birthday today. Yeah.
Wow,
birthday.
Happy birthday! What do we say? Feliz. Oh, I only know it in Spanish. Feliz Navidad. No, that's Christmas.
happy Christmas to a bloke that lives in France. Okay. Yeah. But right.
Bon
aniversaire.
Bon
aniversaire. Yeah.
Ed is fluent.
Yeah. Yeah.
See.
Bon aniversaire.
Bon aniversaire.
Yeah. 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 No. Happy birthday to Jamie. He's in.
And also
France.
Feliz Navidad. Yeah.
And happy Christmas. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
For next year.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's great. What's he going to do?
I FaceTimed him this morning. I said, "What are you doing today?" He said, "Building a brick wall."
I knew he was going to say that.
Where in France is he?
He lives in Lot de Garonne, which is on the edge
nice.
Of the Dordogne.
Lovely.
Yeah, beautiful. Has a manor house which he's restoring and a small holding which
very
he
nice.
Grows stuff.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's a very lovely part of the world.
Yeah, it's beautiful down there.
Yeah, it's empty.
Do you know it, Ed?
I do. Yeah, I know. I've got a house in near Poitiers.
Oh, right, lovely.
Just north of there. Yeah. And yeah. I lived in. I did a French and business degree, so I lived in Lyon for a year.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's why you know how to say happy birthday, you snake.
Bon anniversaire, yeah.
You didn't say you did a business degree in French or français.
Yeah.
Well, so on that note, let's introduce our guest, all the way from France, via Etchingham in Sussex, Ed Grimes of Hospitality Talent UK.
Thank you very much.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you onto the show with your eclectic talents, Ed, and we're going to find out more about you as the next 20 minutes or so unfold. Why don't you kick off by telling us a little bit about you, and we already know you did a French business degree.
So I did a French and business degree, and then I like a lot of people probably fell into hospitality straight from uni.
Why?
I guess mainly if people might remember at the time we the pound crashed out of the ERM, do you remember?
Yeah, I remember that.
And there were basically no jobs speaking French was what I wanted to do. Although looking back, you know, you could always think I could have done X, Y, and Z differently and probably ended up where I wanted to be. But didn't. So I ended up working for Greg's, or Baker's Oven it was then.
Right.
As a management trainee. Was there. They were bought by Greg's about 6 months after.
Right.
Did 2 years there, then moved into Safeway, which you might remember as well.
Yeah.
And became a duty manager. And then I was headhunted by, or I guess an agency approached me to go and work for a company called Pret, which at the time...
So you were good. You were a hot shot.
What was the
Pret.
Name?
Pret a Manger.
Oh, Pret a Manger. Yes,
sorry,
yeah.
And they only had 30 shops at the time.
Right.
So you can imagine how long ago that was.
Right.
so my wife was a customer of everyone on the King's Road. I didn't really know them, so I'd only ever worked in, sort of on the outskirts of London, really.
King's Road.
But joined there and had a fantastic 10 years as a started as assistant manager and ended up as head of operations. So ran all of their shops outside the M25 as far as up to Scotland, Brighton, all the airports.
Did you have to travel a lot?
Traveled a lot, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, but had an amazing time.
Why was it amazing? What was amazing about it?
I mean, it was, I guess, work hard, play hard is the best way to describe it. But we were young. It was a really fun company. Julian and Sinclair founded it, knew exactly how to motivate people, gave them ownership. You felt like as a store manager, you were running that shop yourself.
Wow.
Had a really good time. And then I was approached by my old boss and went to work for Eat as head of retail, sorry. Then after a year became retail director and was there and doubled the size of the company.
Wow.
And then left, had a brief time in hairdressing for a year and a half.
As you do. So did you train to be a hairdresser?
No, I was a COO of a company that was bought by Lloyds Bank or invested into by Lloyds Bank.
Okay.
And knew some of the people who'd been part of the management team. So joined there. Then after that, I went back into hospitality. And I've done, the last 5 years, I've done several things. I'm on the board of several tech startups, all in the hospitality space, like payment and ordering type thing.
Yeah, okay.
And also started a couple of startups, one a Lebanese brand, which is in London.
Oh, I think I know that. What's
it
called?
Zatar. Do you know Zatar? It's on Baker Street.
Yeah, I love Lebanese. It's my favourite food.
Yeah, it's really
ever.
Good, delicious food. Yeah. And then a couple of other startups for some sort of big corporates, like in the hospitality space. And it's really... are you going to ask me why I'm doing this business? Or should I
carry on. I'm fascinated.
We're just about to get the port and cigars out.
Yeah. We're not going to interrupt this. This is a story, this. Yeah.
So it was probably with Zatar that it became apparent in the last sort of 4 years.
That's the Lebanese brand. And it's Kelim Arabi.
Huh?
And it's Kelim Arabi.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Good. Thank you. Yeah. Shukran.
No, she just said her donkey's not very well. Yeah.
Baba Ganoush.
Baba Ganoush, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So we did. So that was, in that brand, we started everything from scratch. Everything was made in-house. We had our own kitchen.
Still has its own kitchen.
So, but we realised that when we opened it in 2020 of all times, that the access to staff over the 4 years that I was involved was getting less and less and less. And you couldn't, you know, you were paying fees for people that you wouldn't normally have to pay to recruit.
Yep.
Staff turnover was high because people were able to jump from one brand to another easily and so on. So April last year, I thought, well, let's try and address that by starting a recruitment business that helps solve that situation. So rather than recruiting from in the UK, whereas at the time, I think there were 155,000 vacancies in hospitality.
Oh, yeah.
It's come down slightly now.
Mm. But a lot of businesses have gone out.
They have
of
gone,
business.
Exactly. So the vacancies have gone because of people. The businesses have gone. But we started to, we set up a solution to say, let's make it easy for clients to recruit, but also for candidates to come and fill those jobs. So we have now, we have two legal partners who work with us to do the visas and sponsorship licenses. And we've got, we're recruiting from sort of over 20 countries now.
Right. And are you looking for Arabic?
So it depends. So at the moment, most of our candidates come through our network, and they come from people that we've worked with in the past. So I say we, it's myself and my business partner who and I work together at Eat.
You can name him.
His name's Ed Godwin. He's the HR director, and I was the retail director. So that's how we know each other well. And basically, we've got this network of people we've worked with or been introduced to over the years, or we've worked in the UK and gone back to other countries. And so now we've got access to about 4,000 people, candidates currently, who are all experienced, qualified, have mostly worked in the Middle East or working in the Middle East. Lots of them come from the Philippines, from Nepal, from Bangladesh, Pakistan.
Mm. With a great work ethic.
Oh, amazing, yeah. So, and we basically screen them, interview them, and then we introduce them to clients who are recruiting for those roles.
So how do you screen them online?
They're online, yeah. So last week I did about 35 interviews.
So are they Zooms?
Who's Zoom or Teams, or Google Meet and, or whatever, you name it, really.
Yeah.
And presumably, because you mentioned you had a time with some legal people, presumably you're helping employers with their visa applications and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the reason for that is, I mean, when I was at Zatar, we looked at bringing Lebanese chefs into the UK.
Mm.
And I went onto the government website and I looked at how to become a sponsor.
Right.
And it is really, really difficult.
It's complicated.
It's
easy
to make a mistake. It's not impossible. Of course, you could do it, but it's not easy. So I put a shout out on LinkedIn April last year for partners to help.
Right.
And that's where we got them from.
Right, okay.
So basically what we wanted to do was make it cheap or relatively cheap for the client to recruit.
Yeah.
Simple, because we do all the legal side. So we do the sponsorship license with our partners, Questals, do the sponsorship side. And then the candidates can also get the visas through them.
Right.
So the idea being that it's as simple, relatively, to recruit somebody from Dubai to come here as it is to recruit somebody from Faversham, for example. And there's several benefits, I guess, in that the candidate, because they're coming on a visa for sort of 3 to 5 years, from a client's perspective, that person's most likely to stay with them for 3 to 5 years because they're sponsored.
They're
coming here because they want to experience the UK hospitality sector. They're looking to
the lovely weather.
Yeah, I do have some very very amusing conversations with people about that.
How do you get over the price of rental and accommodation?
Well, there's a minimum salary threshold. in a way, for chefs, they're going to be pretty decent salary because they're so in demand. You can only recruit from a front of house perspective, you can only recruit manager levels in a way. So the salaries are decent. We actually help people find rooms as well. So I was personally viewing one just before Christmas for one of our candidates who was coming from India.
I guess some hospitality employers still have live-in staff as well.
They do, yes. It's less and less. Our hotels do. We don't have so many hotel customers at the moment.
Right.
But they would.
Yeah.
But for because my background is in quick service restaurants or casual dining.
Yeah.
Most of those people don't.
Yeah.
So what we found is a lot of people we're talking to recruit for them are asking us what we can do to help.
Yeah.
So we've put a lot more emphasis on that, which we didn't think we would originally need to do.
Right.
So like helping them find rooms, going to view the rooms, helping them understand where that location is and how it is to get to work and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we make a big effort on that.
Okay, cool.
Do you go out to Cairo?
Not yet, no. I have interviewed a lot of people from Cairo. But most of our candidates come through a couple of people in our network who are Filipinos working in Kuwait, and they give us some fantastic candidates who are working either in Kuwait themselves or in Dubai, UAE.
When I was recently in Dubai with my son who lives there, we had Filipino staff who were just beautiful and what a work ethic. They were just lovely. And they were cuddling my mum, singing with my mum. Yeah. She's 93. Couldn't do enough.
No, so me and my wife and I we fight over the office at home where we both work. So she tries to work and I try to work. But last week I had loads of interviews to do and she was sitting sort of out of camera on her computer. And she kept turning around to me because she could hear. I didn't have headphones on. I was listening on the speaker. But the quality of communication, one thing, but also that focus on customer service, going the extra mile. We do quite a comprehensive sort of competency-based interview, so they all have to give examples of when they've done X, Y, Z in their life rather than just give me an answer that they think I'd like to hear. And it's just amazing. You can imagine just putting those people, it's so nice to introduce them to our clients because of that, the way they come across and the way they want to succeed. Yeah.
So do you help with flights as well? Or
no,
does
so
your
what,
client help
what
with
we
flights?
Do is we when we're interviewing the candidates, we explain what the costs are to them. Then when we're pitching to our clients to get people to use us or encourage people to use us, we explain the same cost of the client too. And then what we say to both is that some clients are happy to pay some of those costs up front for the candidates. Some are happy to pay but then deduct from salary. Some are happy to pay some. Some are happy and not going to pay any, depending on how much money they've got.
Mm.
But no. So the most common one is for the client to pay things like the immigration health surcharge and maybe deduct that from the salary over the course of their visa, which makes that's the biggest chunk of money that the candidate have to pay themselves otherwise. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So when did you launch the business, Ed?
April last year.
Right, okay. Yeah. So kind of 9 months in.
Yeah, 9 months, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yes.
And are you pleased you did it?
Yeah, I think so. Depends what time of day you ask me the question. Really.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, it's a roller coaster. Mm. I've never envisaged being in recruitment before. Mm. I've recruited loads of people to work for me.
Yeah,
personally.
Sure.
So, I mean, I've got a lot of experience of that, but didn't expect it to be doing it.
Okay. I'm going to make a statement.
Yeah.
You can tell me I'm wrong, you're more than welcome to do that.
Yeah.
One of the problems with launching something innovative and new is getting people's attention. Because the minute you say recruitment, they just assume you're a standard recruitment agency and they won't talk to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you still struggle a bit with that?
We do, yeah. So I mean, I use that line as one of my opening lines is we're not like a recruitment agency.
Yeah.
But we are, clearly. Mm. But we try and say how we're different. And the reason being we're different is the fact we've worked in the sector ourselves for so long.
Yeah.
Like 30 years. So we push that one with clients. But I mean, we've been pretty lucky because most of our clients so far have come through people we know.
Yeah, for sure.
So we've got a few people on our board as non-execs who introduce us to people.
Yeah.
We've got our own networks of people.
Yeah.
And then one person will introduce us to somebody else. So I want to be in a position where I can go to people I don't know, because I know there's a big market, and people are in demand, have a big demand for staff there.
Yeah.
But we haven't really been able to push that yet because we're using people we know. So then we get in the door without being seen as just an agency.
Absolutely.
I was thinking about Australians as well, and Kiwis and that, because they often love to come here for a few years and then they realise what the weather's like, go back.
Exactly. I've got a good friend who's used to work with me here in the Pret a Manger days, who's in New Zealand. Mm. And we sort of reconnected a few weeks ago to do that, to try and see if people could come here.
Mm.
And he introduced me to somebody who's runs an agency in New Zealand and Australia. Mm. But the situation is equally bad, particularly in Australia.
Yeah, it's
so a lot of people are going from New Zealand to Australia.
Mm.
Australia are giving like a lot of leeway on visas and so on for New Zealanders to go there.
It's funny how it seems to be the whole world at the moment, isn't it, with energy crisis. And, you know, when I talk to people abroad on Twitter, they're all going through the same thing.
Yeah, it's Western countries, isn't it? And you find that there's a man looking at me through the door. Oh, it's Mr. Webster.
Yeah, Simon Webster coming in. We're just in the middle of hospitality chat, which is, you know, of course, my thing. I'm enjoying this.
Who doesn't like a nice bit of hospitality?
I know. But my new husband was listening to you last week, and he was out yesterday, so I wanted him to give me loads of questions to ask you, but I'm just going to take you down the pub instead with your wife and grill you.
Anyway, I was saying to Ed that in answer to you, Western countries are struggling with these kind of jobs, because people don't really look at them from a career perspective any longer. I do a program in schools, colleges and universities called 30-30, which is a careers program.
Uh-huh.
It's a free program where I try to get people to understand that starting work in an industry isn't where you're going to end up in an industry. Right. You know, so for instance, I did a career special on hospitality with the Institute of Hospitality.
Yes.
And I just started by saying, who'd like to be the general manager of a hotel in Bali? And loads of people put their hand up, and I went, who'd like to be a waiter in a hotel in Luton? And everybody went, no. So, but unless you start as a waiter in Luton, you can't end up as a hotel manager in Bali. It's a process. It's a journey. You've got to start at the bottom. And one of the problems we seem to have managed to construct in Western society is everybody's been told they can go to university and then start at the top.
It's true. I mean, my nephew is a chef, and when he's it's like mid-20s now,
right?
But when he was a late 20s probably actually, but when he was at school, he was, you could tell he was going to be a chef. He always wanted to be a chef,
right?
Yet he was, his parents said, forgive me for saying, wanting him to do his A-levels,
right?
But you could see there was no real benefit in him staying to do that, because you're sort of 2 years further down the line.
Even
if you go to university but you still want to be a chef, you're even further down the line.
Yeah,
so he's ended up, I think he did his first year, did his an AS level, then went off to be a chef.
Yeah,
and now he's a sous chef in a Michelin starred restaurant in Switzerland.
But this is a, I don't want to get on a rant about this, but this is a lot of the problem, is that we've got this one-size-fits-all approach to everything that says you've got to do GCSEs, you've got to do A-levels, you've got to go to university, yeah? Tony Blair started this by going, everybody needs to go to university. So everybody goes, okay, we'll go to university, and then he went, oh, and now we're going to charge you to go to university, yeah? But everybody doesn't need to go to university. Even if you want a degree, you don't need to go to university. You could get a level 6 or level 7 apprenticeship and get a degree. And all the jobs that require those kind of skills are where we struggle, because too many people are going to university and expecting to come out and do something at a higher level straight away.
Yes, true. Yeah.
Yeah. A shame.
I've got a degree in media studies. I will therefore go on to the Today programme and present the Radio 4's flagship show. I'll be the new Holly Willoughby.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can you rock a wrap dress?
Yeah.
Me, definitely. Well, I don't think they make them big enough.
Yeah. Well, I did an announcement on the radio once for a friend of mine whose daughter was at university, and she was looking for part-time work while she was at university, and I just said, so if anybody needs an 18-year-old managing director of a firm, she's available, on quite good rates, you know. People won't start at the bottom and learn a trade.
I had James McComas, who's the what is
General
he,
Manager.
Thank you. For Eastwell Manor Hotel and Spa. And he...
Champneys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eastwell Manor Hotel and Champneys. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm taking my lion's mane to help the brain.
Yeah.
But
it's not working.
He started at the beginning, and I love his whole ethos.
But all of us started at the beginning.
Yeah.
Whatever we do, we all started at the coalface of something, and then you progress through it. We've just managed to convince people, because I'm on a rant now, because we started charging people to go to university, having told them to go to university, we've then now got to justify that. So we then start telling people, well, if you go to university, pay your 60 grand, you're going to get a fantastic job. It's not true.
You might, but you have to be exceptional.
That was always the case before.
My son's wife's brother, and I don't think that's a direct relationship, but it's my son's wife's brother. He's just done a hospitality degree, and he's now working front of house at a boutique hotel in London.
Cool.
Which, among other things,
hotel is it?
He told me, and I've forgotten.
Okay,
small,
you need lion's mane then as well.
It's small and five star. And
I love a boutique hotel, don't you?
It's got a comparative. What's the word? A sister hotel in France. So there's only the two of them,
right.
But they are, you know, it's proper high end stuff.
Mm. Right.
But he was working all day Christmas Day. He was working the New Year, and he's working 14 hours a day. Regularly.
Very, very tough.
This is one of the issues with hospitality, isn't it? Why it can be hard to recruit is because the hours can be unsocial.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, but I think your other point probably is more valid. Until we as parents start telling people our kids to go and get a job in hospitality, then it's never going to be seen as attractive enough, I suppose. But there's quite a lot of people in the sector trying to and working on encouraging young people to go into hospitality.
There's a couple of
big problems on that.
Yeah.
But even so, there's still that, at the moment, there's still be that gap where, you know, you can't go straight from school and become a head chef, for example. So we're missing that piece because people aren't coming through the ranks at the moment to get to that level.
It's like Will at Flimwell, Jules.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Will. Devlin.
Devlin, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
small
very...
holding.
He's very passionate about... making working for him sociable.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed to work every weekend or, you know, some of his chefs work only during the week at lunchtimes and so on and so
forth. Yeah, exactly.
And
that means they keep their relationships.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah.
The divorce rate is so
difficult.
High.
It's difficult to manage that.
Yes.
Financially it pays because you don't have to keep recruiting staff because they leave because they burn out.
Yeah.
But it's a difficult thing to manage.
Yeah.
Okay, so 9 months in.
Yes.
You're fairly sure that you're pleased that you've done it.
Well, no, definitely I enjoy it. I can see how we can add value for sure to the sector, which is good. Yeah.
Okay.
And
of course, it's a big marketplace. It's a very big marketplace. So you say you're kind of dealing with what did you call the sector that you work in? I hadn't heard that phrase.
QSR, quick service restaurants. Yeah.
Quick service restaurants.
Yes.
Oh, I like that.
Yes,
fast
like
food.
Fancy word for fast food.
Yeah. I was going to say fast food. I thought no, that would be abusive.
But
quick service restaurants.
The Lebanese restaurant, because I'm mad about it.
Yeah.
Is that fast food?
It is, yeah.
So can you eat in?
Yes, you can. It's got a big seating area, but it's grab and go. It's like Pret style. Basically.
Okay, and it's what things like tabbouleh and. Shawarma-y type things.
Shawarma, falafel.
Wow, it's right up my street.
Where is that? Because I missed the beginning of
in
this.
In Baker Street.
Sorry?
Baker Street.
Mm.
In London?
Yeah.
All right, okay.
So have they got just one at the moment?
At the moment, yeah. I think they're opening a second one. Yeah. Mm.
Because when I lived in London many moons ago, what's it called? All Arabic in...
Edgware Road.
Baker Road, Baker Edgware Street, Edgware Road.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
Arabic. And there was Ramush juice,
yes,
and I used to frolic in all of those. Amazing.
Stu, my youngest son.
My favourite food.
Stu, my youngest son, and I used to go to a Lebanese restaurant in the King's Road.
What was it called?
I have no idea.
That's probably Marouche maybe as well, isn't
it?
Yeah,
it could have been.
Because Marouche is a chain though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the Lebanese food, I've got a couple of Lebanese cookbooks as well.
It's delicious food.
I mean, labneh, if it's made properly as a dip.
Yeah,
I love it.
I love the food, but I let Stu, Stu's grown up now. When we first went there, he was about 12 or 13. And I let, he works in finance actually, but he's a fantastic chef.
Right, okay.
And he loves cooking. So I said, well, you order the food, Stu, in this Lebanese restaurant. So I said, but I like hummus. Yeah. So he ordered this hummus dish, right? And there were two of us, and it came out. It was massive, Okay. You can't eat that much hummus. No one could eat that much hummus. It turned out there was a roast chicken in it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Whole roast chicken.
A hang whole on. Roast chicken buried in the hummus.
In the hummus?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Mm. I do, I know a Moroccan chef, Mohammed. I used to do the PR for their restaurant, and they close the restaurant, but I'll put him in touch with you thank as you, well, because yeah. you never know.
Well, we used to go to Cafe Maresca as well in Canterbury, which
yeah,
is Cafe
Maresca is amazing. Yeah, and that was lockdown that killed that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know,
yeah,
and,
killed, so many good places were killed by lockdown.
I know, yeah. And I keep harping on to on
she's
Twitter.
She's a harpy.
But if you don't shop local and you don't, I mean, I love an independent restaurant because otherwise everything's just going to be the same. Wherever you go, it's going to be the same. Yeah, and yeah. It's so nice to go to somewhere like Will Devlin's or Corner.
Just to be devil's advocate, but you know I own independent coffee yeah. shops, so I agree with you. But the whole ethos of that kind of food is exactly the opposite of what you just said. It's because you know what you're going to get.
Yes, but each chef will put an individual thing, whereas in a chain they don't. If you go to Pret or
yeah, yeah,
go,
no, exactly. But my point is that the whole business model of things like that yeah. is to say yeah. it doesn't matter where you go yeah. in the world. If you walk into a McDonald's, you know, yes. unless you go in India, when you're going to get a goat burger instead. But, you know, anywhere else, you know, a Big Mac is a Big Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying yeah, what the business the model of yeah. it yeah. is.
But there's room for niche players.
This is Simon.
I yeah. mean, we all like mm-hmm. A nice pizza for the yeah. sake of argument. Mm. My preference has always been Pizza Express. They do thin crust. I don't yeah. like the big dough things, and I don't yeah. want to get too fat, blah, 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 blah. But there's a new place opened up in Canterbury High Street, the name of which escapes me. And we were wandering down the high street. We popped in, and they do all their bases on sourdough bread, to yeah. which I am addicted. It's yeah. my favourite bread of all, this yeah. sourdough yeah. bread. And they have a particular flavour and a particular taste. And we went back there, I can't remember if it's 1 week or 2 weeks later, and had another lunch there.
Yeah. And it's independent.
If it's a chain, it's a very small one. It's not like it's a big
yeah,
chain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But well, they were coming up with niche menu mm. based on sourdough. Mm. Yeah, and not all their pizzas have a tomato base, which was interesting.
It's like, I don't know if you remember Adam.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Adam Daniska that owned On Pizza.
Yeah. Adam, they were delicious.
Adam used to work for Domino's. He started his own pizza place in Ashford.
Yeah.
Completely different pizzas. Absolutely stunning. Fabulous. Unfortunately, they had to shut down. They just, because people would go, oh, I'll go into Pizza Hut or I'll go, you know.
Was it a restaurant or takeaway?
It was a takeaway.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Takeaway and delivery.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning pizza, absolutely fantastic, but people didn't know it. Mm. So, you know.
I was talking to my father-in-law, going back to independence and shopping local and using cash if you can. Mm. My father-in-law lives in Southend, Westcliff, on the seafront, nice. And they don't have a fishmonger. Mm. You know, because he's kosher, so I always yes. do a big fish when I did a great big sea bass for them.
Gefilte fish.
I did gefilte fish. chopped liver, bagels. You know, they don't have a fishmonger anymore. And I just say, like, if you don't use it, so in Whitstable, we've got two great greengrocers, and I can go in there and get a tamarind root, for example, you know, and the fruit tastes completely different to supermarket fruit. So I'm harping on, but, you know, please don't come to Whitstable and go to Costa Coffee, go to Tea and Times, you know, Little Independence. Go to Whitstable Produce, mm. Little Independent, where the food is all different, mm. the coffee is all different, yes. the cakes are all homemade. They're not from Brake Brothers, you know. Mm. So we have to be
Major
really
Ashford
careful.
Major Ashford employer, but yeah, so, you yeah, know. Yeah,
yeah. What was that?
Major Ashford employer, which would yeah. be nice to him.
Well, Brake Brothers, yeah, yeah. They're lovely, of course.
I thought we were going to see is quite a lot of a big surge in Japanese and Asian food.
That's yeah, nice. All the pot foods, because people yes. are on the run, like yeah, you say. Yeah.
But
what's it called? I keep seeing it. Benny pots.
Donburi and people like
yeah.
the bento box.
Bento yeah. box yes. and all yeah, that. Yeah.
So mm.
Pho.
Yeah.
I learned how to make pho. Really,
okay.
really good.
I'm seeing a lot of candidates coming, but also a lot of clients coming here from abroad. So
pho leather.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's PHO, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's Vietnamese broth, or yeah, around broth, there. Yeah, and they just have it for breakfast. They have it on all the time. Chicken broth, basically, but with a little bit of fish sauce in it.
Yes, and dumpling. And
oh, Ed and I could just chat all day, you know.
Many
if only
years
there was
ago,
a couch and a bottle of wine here, we'd be well away.
Many years ago, I had a very, very brief dalliance with a lady of,
ooh.
I think, Chinese origin, and she, you know, 16, 17, 18. And we ended up going to Bayswater. and there was some serious money in an extended part of the family. And we ended up shopping down New Bond Street, and then we got taken out to a proper Chinese restaurant that they knew and I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
And we had proper dim sum. We had Chinese food. Not a drop of monosodium glutamate to be seen anywhere.
Yeah.
And the difference in experience, it stayed with me. I don't think I've had anything quite as good since, and I've had some quite nice Chinese meals since. But that just left a major impression on me.
There are individual, we're going off piste here, but there's individual dishes like, you know, in Cairo when I lived there when I was 18, molokhia, which is, you never have molokhia here.
I can't even speak it.
Yeah, it's like a spinach soup thing, and they're mad about it. They're absolutely mad about it.
I sound kind of glad we don't have because you haven't sold it to me to be a kind of spinach soup.
Okay. Things like
just call me Popeye. Yeah.
Full madamas, do you do that there? Yeah. See, I think that's Egyptian. Okay. So that's chickpeas. They're big on chickpeas, but full madamas. Or okra, of course.
Okra, yes.
Do they do that in the Lebanese?
No, they do in Lebanese, but not in the Zatar.
Yeah, it wouldn't go, I don't think. But anyway, back to you.
Enough about us. Talk about you. Yeah. You're here to talk, but we're doing the talking for you.
Yeah.
It's got very used to it now.
Yeah.
I think we all do after a while.
Fantastic story. We wish you continued success with that business. You know, that. It's important what you're doing as well, you know. I know, talking to Robert Richardson, who's the chief executive of the Institute of Hospitality, they've been lobbying the government very hard to start to change some of the visa restrictions.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the shortage of hospitality staff is beyond ridiculous now.
It's very tough. Also, a lot of people don't talk about the customer who's the end person who ends up paying for it.
Yeah.
Because, less people serving you, but your food price has gone up. So your cost of a trip for lunch has maybe gone up by 30-40%, but you're not having that same experience.
God, the price. Yeah. I mean, Gav and I, new husband and I, used to go out for breakfast once a week in Whitstable, and the last time we did it was like £49 or something. Yeah. And I bought him a Bloody Mary, and I had a Buck's Fizz. But, you know, you cannot do that for breakfast when at home you can rustle it up.
She nicks a bottle of Prosecco at breakfast at home.
It was his birthday.
Only one bottle, is what I heard.
Each.
Yeah, but I'm on a 90-day protocol at the moment, Simon, so nothing has passed my lips. No sugar, no alcohol. It's very boring. But I eat really well, though.
So, Ed, thank you so much for that. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and hear about your fantastic business. If people want to find out more about Hospitality Talent UK, how do they do that?
Yeah, the easiest thing is to do is hospitalitytalentuk.com. Mm-hmm. So on there, if you page down, there's a link to either contact us directly or book a slot to have a call.
Fantastic.
Nice and easy, yeah.
Brilliant. Ed, thank you so much for that. Stay with us for the rest of the show. We're going to have a break in about 5 minutes, but we ought to start reading some tweets as well because we've got quite a few.
We have, and I'm still thinking about Lebanese food now.
Trouble. You talk about food and you can't do anything with it for the rest of the day.
So, especially when you're on a 90-day protocol, at @JamieAA_again from Francais is tweeting, everybody's wishing him a happy birthday. I asked him if he was having a petit déjeuner.
And what did he say?
Peut-être. He said he's taking it easy, but he is building a wall.
He's building a brick wall. I told you he's building a brick wall.
Too busy to do with his breakfast.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Is he going to have a full English or a croissant?
He won't have a full English, will he, in France?
Well, I don't know.
Frog's legs he will have, won't he, or something like that.
Well, hop over here.
Martin Reeves, without the Vandellas, he says... He's listening in. I was a milk monitor at nursery school and can remember glass bottles with straws with an exclamation.
Simon's looking perplexed. We were talking about milk earlier.
Yeah. When you could get milk in a third of a pint bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And a glass bottle with a straw. Yeah. It was lovely. And it was all in a crate, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I remember at school, we used to collect all, we had to scrape our leftovers into a big bucket for pig swill.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't think you do that anymore. No. You know, it was great.
The pigs wouldn't eat it.
Like my Darcy Greyhound, she's very fussy. Mm. She loves bone broth. So he says, Martin Rees, it would be the highlight of our school day, the milk, the Milky. And he was a milk monitor like you, Paul Andrews.
Yep.
I think I was a cupboard monitor. You know, I can't remember.
No, that's just what they told you.
They just told you that. It's like, you in and lock the door behind you, Jules.
Get in the cupboard, Jules. It's your job to make sure that cupboard doesn't go anywhere.
I was quite wild when I got older, but I can't remember what was in the cupboard. Dear.
You're going to regret telling me that.
It might have been hockey sticks. I was going to hockey.
I'd stop now while you're ahead.
We want to know who she was locked in the cupboard with.
It might have been Terry Beaver. I can't remember. But,
there are so many gags here. I can see our license disappearing Ofcom coming. Is it Ofcom?
Yeah.
Ofcom coming down.
You can hear the sirens, can't you, as they come down the switches off.
I was a right wing in hockey, so it might have been looking after the sports cupboard. I can't remember. I could tell you many
convenient
tales.
Convenient that.
Michael Park Surveyors, hello to you guys. They're tuning in. They say, tuned in and ready to tweet up a bunker storm. They've used the Bee Bunker hashtag avidly. And they say, I still say tweet, tweet, because I said tweet us. Because, you know, you can't say post us. Or post us is all wrong. And they've done a Tweety Pie. And also Matt Dorrington, who is late of our show. He's been on it. He is listening in, and he's SEO and Google Ads marketeer. It's very posh. Managing director of the Blue Moxie Agency. That's at Blue Moxie, M-O-X-I-E agency. He's ex-Royal Navy, you know, do you know?
I do know that, yeah.
So we salute you, sir. www.bluemoxie.co.uk is his website. Have a look and see what they can do for you.
Cool. Parallel Group have said, what a brilliant show. Thank you, Paul and Jules. Thank you.
And what do they do?
I don't know.
Oh, well, can't you look?
Hold on. I could.
So
Office and Document Solutions, based in Uxbridge.
Okay. Oh, lovely. That sounds good. Somebody's Beefy Farmer. He's one of my farming followers. He's a farmer, a beef farmer, as it says, Beefy Farmer on the Twitter, has commented on my breakfast and says it looks like a duck's beak on the left.
Well, I told you it looked like rat vomit.
No, that was new husband's porridge.
Oh, right.
Okay. No, he had the rat vomit. I had eggs and bacon, and he also
had... Jules, I need to know this question. How long have you been married to your current husband?
Well, it's our 30th anniversary.
Your 30th anniversary.
In February, but we've only been married 13 years, hence new husband.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So he's an established relationship, but new husband.
Yeah.
By new, she means latest.
Yes. Well, I keep introducing my wife as my first wife. She doesn't like that.
And we've had a new listener, Red Hawk Winter. Hawk is in the birdie, and they say, how about doing a show on the retrospective loan charge scandal, HMRC? That's one for you, Simon. Do you know much
loan
about that?
Loan charge scandal.
Yeah, HMRC. And there's loads of things. I'll send it to you afterwards.
Send it to me afterwards. I might comment.
Yes.
It's the next big scandal after the post office one.
Is it?
Loan charge, yeah.
There's many scandals.
Yeah, but it's a slightly different, but HMRC are being a bit outrageous with it. But
So what is it? Where they?
We're going to break for a break in a minute. I'll tell you when we come back, because it is going to be a big one. It's going to be as big as the post office one. Sarah Marsh Collins has tweeted, we're listening to the Business Bunker Show along with Mad Scientists at IS Instruments and i3D Robotics. Wow, cool.
Yeah, boffins.
Yeah.
Scientists.
Yeah, nice one. Thank you, Sarah. We can do one more.
Well, Marsh Network, let's talk about them. So they have a networking face-to-face in East Sussex, Pet Village Hall, that's P-E-T-T. It's on the 6th of February, so it's a diary date, 10:30 until midday. And you can book by going to marshnetwork.co.uk.
Fantastic. We're going to have a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Simon Webster. We'll be back in about 5 minutes.